Chris says, don't screw up. Hi, everybody. My name is Myers Raymer, and I'm an alcoholic. This is the coolest. A minute ago, I took your picture, and it was not to bust your anonymity. It was so I could show my wife that it's like talking to a bunch of movie stars. It's the prettiest bunch of people I've ever seen in my whole life. Is there such thing as an ugly person in Iceland? I mean, it's an amazing thing to me. Can you guys hear me okay? There's something about flying that always makes my ears do goofy things, and it takes a week for them to get back to normal. And so it always sounds like I'm in a well when I'm doing this, and I can't tell whether I'm talking real quiet or whether I'm talking real loud. So if I get kind of out there, you guys just wave at me and I'll slow down. You know, there are a couple of things that I'm hugely passionate about in Alcoholics Anonymous, and one of them is sponsorship, and one of them is 12-step work. And they're sort of connected. They're joined. You really can't separate them. But it's the one area of Alcoholics Anonymous where we've really done a good job at screwing things up. You know, do you ever ask yourself why it is that people don't want to sponsor and don't want to do 12-step work? The reason I'm guessing at this, based on my own experience, is fear. We are afraid to step up to the plate and do the things that we need to do. And because the fellowship, as a general rule worldwide, has let us off the hook somewhat, we don't have the... See, early AA, they said, okay, come, you sober up, and then it's your responsibility to carry the message to somebody else. It's your responsibility to be working with somebody else. And yet, within our fellowship, we've drifted from that. And we have well-meaning sponsors that tell us to take 2 years before we start doing this or do this. Or, you know what? You need to get better first. You get well yourself and then go out there. Well, wait a minute, guys. The book didn't say that. The book didn't say that. In the morning, we're going to talk about this some at length, this 12-step stuff. But I wanted to focus on sponsorship specifically this morning for a couple of minutes, and I know Chris and Peter want to add some stuff, and we'll answer some questions if you have any questions about this. But it's an area that gets real weird. There's no area that we talk about where we get more people asking more questions than about sponsorship, because it's unclear exactly what our responsibilities are. You see, if you look in your book, everything from chapter 7 all the way through 11 is about sponsorship. That's where we know, you know. So people say, well, I don't quite understand how to sponsor. Well, go read. It's right there. Every question. The book from 7 on tells us how to deal with relationships, sex, money, health stuff. You name it. It's all right there. And those are our responsibilities. But sponsorship goes beyond that in areas of what our responsibility is to Alcoholics Anonymous in general. What is our responsibility to our group, to the guys that are there in the group with us? What are our responsibilities to our families? And this is all about sponsorship, guys. These are the things that we need to buck up and just realize that it's our responsibility to go tell somebody and show somebody this work. I want you to understand that I can't... Chris's stuff, we'll talk about this in the morning some, but... You know, Chris had a tough time getting here, and then once he got here, he was okay. I didn't have any trouble at all getting to AA. None. Chris brought me. He said, come on. He says, come on, you knucklehead, let's go. And I did, you see? And that's how that worked. Where I ran into problem was after I got here, you see? My nightmare started a couple of years after I got into AA, and I spent a lot of time really hurting. You know, they talk about your bottom being, you know, you'll get your bottom before you get to AA. Guys, I'm telling you right now, my experience was I hit my bottom 7 years away from my last drink in Alcoholics Anonymous. I was as miserable as a man could be. And I had two loving sponsors during that period of time that loved me to death, and they are the kindest men I've ever known, the sweet as they could be. And they nurtured me, and they loved me, and they damn near killed me. They did. They did not know what was in the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous. They had no concept of the steps of Alcoholics Anonymous. We talked about these all nebulous kind of things, and we talked in generalities, and we never looked at it as a basic set of instructions guaranteed to get us to God. We never looked at it from that perspective. As a matter of fact, the God thing was kind of played down. There was this thing that kind of went through our group that perhaps talk of God was scaring off the newcomer. And so, I don't know. We'll talk about that later. But it was just kind of strange. And so as a consequence, at 7 years sober, I'm suicidal. I'm writing hot checks all over Denton County. I cannot keep my eyes off other women, which just my wife just loves that. You can imagine what it was like around our house. I now have three daughters by this time. And the whole thing is just a mess. And so I get in with a bunch of big book thumpers. I'm just going nuts, and I know I'm going to drink, and I get hooked up. Chris saved my life the second time, which is just the weirdest thing. He brought me into AA the first time, and then he watches me unwind in our meetings and get sick again. And he grabs me and says, "Don't do anything. I'm going to see if I can get you hooked up to another group." And so he was in town, and he knew a lot of people. And so he got me hooked up with this crusty old guy named Cliff Bishop. And I'm going to intentionally bust Cliff's anonymity. Cliff's 80 years old, and he's the crustiest, meanest. There's not a man on God's green earth I love more than Cliff Bishop. He simply saved my life because he was willing to look at me and say, "Myers, would you please shut up? Would you please?" But see, because you have to understand, I have all this wisdom that I want to share in this newfound group that I'm involved with. You see, it doesn't matter that I'm sick, so sick I can hardly stand to get up in the morning. It doesn't matter. I still have all this wisdom. You tell me this ego and this arrogance doesn't kick our rear ends. So I get to this deal, and I'm telling you this because you have to understand that. The way it works in Alcoholics Anonymous is that strong sponsorship breeds strong sponsors, you see, and weak sponsorship breeds weak sponsors. And so it's like we wonder how things get down the toilet, how things just get all tore up. Well, I come to AA and I'm too lazy to read the big book. OK, and so I'm sitting at a meeting and this fine, upstanding young gentleman right here tells me something that sounds cool. And I said, "That's hot shit. I like that." Now, it may not be in the big book. It probably wasn't. But it sounded good. And so this man's opinion of what's in this book becomes my doctrine. You see? And so the next time when this man sticks his hand out and says, "Myers, would you help me through the work?" I'll go, "Yeah." Do I pick up the book? No, because I'm too lazy to read it. I don't know what's in it. What my default position is, I go straight to what this man said. I remember this guy said this cool thing in a meeting one time, and then I share what he said. Now, it may have the power to kill this man. It may have helped me at the time that I heard it, but it may kill this man, you see, because it was not our basic text. It was not our program. It was not AA. Well, so 7 years from my last drink and my last drug, I'm full to hear with that kind of information. Guys, I know every cool one-liner. I know every snappy little piece of crap that you can imagine. And I'm gathering up these little buckaroos that I'm sponsoring, and I'm telling them all this stuff, and they're all just falling by the wayside. They're just getting sick and dying and going away, and I'm going, what's going on? How come nobody's staying? You see? Collectively, within the fellowship, that's the question that every one of us needs to ask ourselves. I'm huge on asking ourselves hard questions. Why is it that these guys can't stay sober? Why is it that they're hurting so desperately in the fellowship? Well, you already know what the answer is. We've been talking about it. You already know it before we even got here. They're dying because the message that we're giving these guys in these meetings is not AA. It's a bunch of well-meaning opinions that have the power to kill, have the power to hurt people immeasurably. And so what we need to do is take a proactive stance. If you're talking, let's say, assume for the sake of example that every one of you guys is brand new, squeaking new today in this program. You don't know jack shit about AA. If we're going to start someplace, let's start at one premise. That A, we maybe not know everything. or anything. We're going to set our arrogance and our ego aside, and then we're going to take a proactive stance and make a pact with ourselves to learn what's in the big book. Guys, I don't care if you're, I don't care how many degrees you have. I don't care how smart you think you are. If you don't know what's in the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous, the first 164 pages of this book, you don't know what to carry. Well, God will show me what to carry. No, He won't. He won't. He's going to sit back and scratch his head and he's going to say, the book is there. Read the book. See? Yeah. I got to tell you, the first meeting that I went to at Primary Purpose Group, we're going to talk about this some tomorrow because I want you guys to experience this stuff because it was so funny. Well, it wasn't funny. It was pathetic. It was actually pretty sad. But so I go to this group and these guys are just like, you know, they use the term AA Nazi and I don't really like that term, but it describes this group. I mean, there's like 40 people sitting around this table and they all have big books. Now, you got to understand, I had not seen my big book in years. I had not seen it. Why do we need it? We're not talking about it in our meetings, so I don't need the big book and I just set it aside. So I'm sitting there and everybody has a big book in front of them and we start this deal. Damn. And so I want to share some wisdom. And as I begin to share, 30 people slid forward in their chair. And I'm thinking, what's this about? You know? And one guy drags me back and he says something, you know, like this. And I notice it over about a week's period of time. Every time I get ready to say something, 30 or so people slide forward in their chair. Now, it finally dawned on me what they're doing. They're getting ready. I'm thinking, my head's saying, these guys don't like me and they're trying to shut me down. And how dare they try to do that kind of stuff? And so one night I actually said that, not in so many words, but I just said, you know, you guys are really, you know, you guys seem to be all over me when I'm talking like this. And this guy, you know, he just kind of pulled me to one side and he said, let me ask you a question. He said, I don't think that you understand really what's going on here. And I said, well, what's that? I'm ready to leave. I'm ready to go back to where I was, you see, because they won't let me share. So he says, how long have you been here? And I said, 2 weeks. And he said, okay, in two weeks, the men and women of this group already love you enough to tell you to hush up and listen. They already love you enough to make themselves feel uncomfortable to tell you what you need to hear. And what you need to hear, Myers, and I will tell you, and then you can leave if you want to, is that you're an arrogant, self-centered son of a bitch. And you need to sit and listen. I said, well, screw you, but I'm going to stay. And I did. And I sat right there and laid there like this. And we went back through this stuff. But it took all the... See, what they were doing was they were holding me real close. And they were loving me. And they were telling me the things that I needed to hear that nobody else in 7 years had the guts to tell me. Nobody. My sponsors didn't say anything. When I wanted to share a bunch of goofy crap at a meeting, they just sat there and looked at me. You see? And these guys weren't going to do that. So I got this crusty old dude to be my sponsor. And there starts the deal. And he shows me and guides me through this work. And it's the darndest thing, because as I began to understand what's in the book, I began to understand that line on page 132 in the big book where it says we have recovered and been given the power to help others. The fear that consumed my life around Alcoholics Anonymous began to fall away. And I began to get healthy and I began to understand that I had a message with depth and weight that only I could transmit to somebody. You see, that language of the heart, I was able to do things for the drunk that the treatment centers couldn't do. And you understand that. There's nobody in here that has not experienced that stuff. You can sit there and look scathingly at a counselor that's talking to you about certain things because he's not experienced what it's like to be so fearful and so consumed by your disease that it's just kicking your ass. You see, he just doesn't understand. But the real drunk or the real addict that knows understands that. So real quick before I sit down, what we're going to do is there are some responsibilities that we have around sponsorship. And one of them is to be responsible to make sure that the guys that we work with get through the work. And that doesn't mean give them the book and say, read the first 164 pages and then we'll talk. I guess you could do that. But your responsibility is to stand on their neck and make sure that they read it. Make sure that the miracle starts working, you see. Because left on our own devices, what do? We take the easier, softer way. you see, and I'll read the first 16 pages and I'll set it aside, you see. And so that's the reason why the only meetings that I go to are literature-based meetings, because we have three meetings a week and that's all we do is study the big book. We study all the way through and then we start over and start back over again, you see. We don't have any discussion type stuff. But because of that, I stayed focused in the Word until I learned what was in the big book and could become comfortable with it. And you will too. And as you do that, what you're going to find is that the message that you carry to the guys that you work with is going to be so intense, and their recovery is going to be so intense, that it's the funnest thing in the whole wide world. Over the years, I've had the pleasure of working with hundreds of men. And somebody asked me one time, he said, "Well, I don't understand why you spend so much time working with guys in Alcoholics Anonymous." I would love to tell you that there's all kinds of other things involved in this thing, but the truth of the matter is, it's just plain fun to work with guys in this thing. There is nothing cooler on God's green earth than to work with some busted up drunk that comes in, that can't put a sentence together, that's so screwed up as a man that he doesn't know what's going on, and watch his life change, you see? And watch him go back into his home life, and watch his family heal, and watch his little kids come back in and not be afraid of him. You know, the coolest thing for me in recovery was to be able to walk into my home and my kids didn't duck. Serious. Because I had become the man I hated. I'd become a bully, you see? It's just amazing stuff. Things like 13-stepping. You guys know what 13-stepping is, right? Yeah. I should have known they were sophisticates and they knew all about this kind of stuff. Guess what, guys, men in this thing who are sponsoring guys, I don't give a rat's patootie what they say. It is your responsibility to stop that stuff yourself and to make sure that the guys you sponsor understand that. The women that come into this fellowship need to be safe here. And so you women, I see some of you nodding. It goes the same way with women. You know, what we have to understand, let me share a piece of opinion. I don't think there's anything on God's green earth that God takes more offense of than somebody in our program that is supposed to be healthy taking a cheap shot at a new guy that's unhealthy. I think God stands back and like this and goes, "Man, the ass kicking is just coming. It's just coming." Because as responsible, sober members of Alcoholics Anonymous, we're supposed to be healthy. And the new guy coming in that can't make smart decisions and this kind of stuff, and it's so easy prey here, you see? Listen, guys, I'm blessed with so many strong women friends in AA. And I love them dearly. And I'll tell you, we've talked hours about this kind of stuff and about how horrible it is to watch a woman work the work, get right up to the point to where she's beginning to understand what her responsibilities are. She's beginning to understand that there is freedom from this disease that's kicking her ass. And then the hairy leg guy steps in the picture. And now her focus is now no longer on God. It's on this guy. And she's gone. She's gone. You see, and it's so tragic to see because she was right there. And guys, I'm telling you, women whose books I sign, I write this stuff in there all the time. I cannot tell you how much we need strong women in this fellowship doing this work. You see, it's a fact. So with all the tact I can muster, if you're a young woman in this fellowship and some guy is hitting on you, you tell him to screw off. You understand? Tell him to leave you alone until you get healthy. And once you get healthy, the gloves are off. You guys can do whatever you want to do. You can screw like minks. I don't care. But until then, be kind to one another, be good to each other, and let's hold each other accountable and be with each other. I think that's all I want to do right now. You got some comments on Bill, Peter? Thanks, guys.
And they call me the evil twin. They get it all wrong, buddy. They get it all wrong. I just look evil. I'm not. Like this. It's hard. One of the cool things in Alcoholics Anonymous, the way the message kind of got skewed is that this is kind of a temporary deal. We come in here, we get well, and then we go out. You know, this line that we re-enter the mainstream of life, and everybody wants to take that as an excuse to leave the fellowship. And it's like, my question is, how come you can't do it all? You know, why can't you stay in AA and go to the gym and go back to church and, you know, do some cool, start some businesses and go back to school and do all the cool things? My life started 15 years ago when I got sober. We'll talk about that tonight. But gee, guys, what a cool thing this is, and to be able to sponsor some men and women in this fellowship. What Meyer started to say earlier and didn't pursue, and I'm sure he will tomorrow, this one of the reasons that we don't want to sponsor, I mean, I hear it all the time. I said, you know, I'm sponsoring a guy, and I said, I'm booked up. I got too much on my plate at the time. I said, well, listen, get one of the guys that I'm sponsoring to go work with this guy. I said, well, I'm afraid to sponsor. It's like what Meyer said, because we don't know how. We're afraid. I'm afraid I will hurt him. See what I'm saying? But if you stay in the book and just take him through the steps and understand your primary purpose, you can't. How can you hurt him? You can't. If you're playing junior therapist, you can kill him. You dig? If you're playing doctor, well, I think you ought to quit taking those antidepressants. It's none of your business if he's taking antidepressants. You're not a doctor. Well, this is what I think you ought to do about that. You see, here's the biggest misconception about sponsorship in AA today. In all of our fellowships, in Cocaine Anonymous, and our friends and brothers and sisters in Narcotics Anonymous, it's all the same. And this is that this belief that I have to fix the alcoholic. You with me? My job is not to fix the alcoholic. I can't fix him. I can't fix me. That's what the ABCs, and after read how it works, the ABCs, you know, that God could and would if he were sought. My job is to get you cats to God, period. And then what you do with that is your business. But this bullshit that this is my baby, and I'm gonna fix what's wrong with him. Buddy, that's not, look, if I want to enter into this guy's life, I can do that. If I want to advise him on other areas, I can do that. But that is not our primary purpose. Can y'all get down with that? Dr. Bob, the co-founder of Alcoholics Anonymous, in his short life, it was about 15 years that he was sober before he passed away. He worked with conservatively 5,000 drunks. He sponsored 5,000 guys. Now, I've seen estimates closer to 6,000 guys that this man sponsored. Now you go tell me how he can take on all the problems of every single one of these drunks. See, if you do the math on this stuff, guys, this guy was sponsoring close to an average of like one a day. Now, how can you do that? It's like they jam Myers because he sponsors 60 men. Your ego's in the way. You're sponsoring too many people. Listen, that's horseshit. That's absolute horseshit. You can sponsor as many as you've got time to sponsor. My job is to take them through the steps. How long is that going to take? If you're not mucking it up with a bunch of therapy and stuff, it doesn't take very long. The steps were designed to be worked rapidly, folks. The steps were designed to be worked through in a very short period of time, a few weeks. If you're taking longer than a few weeks to work the steps, you are spinning your wheels. Perhaps you don't understand the physical allergy, the mental obsession, and the spiritual malady. Perhaps you don't really. Perhaps you have a lurking notion in the back of your head that you're not even one of us. And we need to talk about that. But if I've qualified you and I've got you to a place where you're convinced that you're an alcoholic, why in the living daylights would I want you to take longer than a few weeks to work these steps? What a cool deal to be in Iceland where most of your amends are right here. It's the truth. You know, some of us guys that travel around the goddamn country, you know, it takes some time to make some of these amends. You got to do a lot. I mean, right here, you know, in a couple of days, you can ring up some people, write some letters, you know, sit down, and you can make some face-to-faces with not. The people that are not working the steps, folks, either they don't know that they're supposed to be working the steps rapidly, or they're stalling for time. They're trying to get out. See, and if I'm a sponsor, it's just like Meyer said, I'm going to stand on your neck and find out. You said you were willing to go to any length? Show me. And let's work these steps so that you can turn around and help me help somebody else get sober. And that's what it's about, folks. Clear out of your mind that your responsibility is to fix that alcoholic. See all these little X's over here? Some of you are wearing the little buttons, the little X's on the outside. Those are issues. Those are things that God is going to take care of. I wish you could take that to heart. Transmit the information that you have out of the book, and you can absolutely not go wrong. Thanks.
Damn, I knew this was going to be like this. I knew it. No, really. Let me clarify something real quick. People say all the time, I hear this all the time. You know, you can only effectively sponsor one, maybe two guys at a time. The truth of the matter is that early AA, because there were so few of them, they sponsored lots of men, lots of them. It's only been recently that we got all whacked out with this numbers game. Sponsorship is not a numbers game. I don't want to even start the idea that you have to sponsor a bunch of guys to be successful. I'm not saying that. But if God brings a bunch of guys into your life to work with, don't be dusting them, man. Don't be, you know, making excuses why you can't do that stuff. Most of the time, if you're not doing it, what Chris was just talking about, a lot of times we spend too much time with these guys. We take on too much. We shoulder too much responsibility. I'll never forget. I'll tell you this real fast. I had started this working with some guys out at this treatment place, and I had probably five or six guys I was working with, and everybody was staying sober. I had these little AA buckaroos, and they were all doing the deal. And I'm thinking, you know me and my arrogance, I'm thinking that I'm God's gift to sponsorship. And and I'm walking around going, yeah, I'm pretty good, like this. And my sponsor, old Clippo, he would look at me and go, but I'm not sure that you've got a grip on this yet. None of this is your doing. This is God's doing. And it was like something had changed all of a sudden. It was like somebody flipped this switch and four of my guys went out. And then I picked up two more guys and they lasted a week and they went out. And then I picked up another two or three and they went out. And now I'm running about a 6-month period of time where nobody's staying sober. You see? And now I'm devastated. I'm crawling around going, geez, what is going on with this stuff, man? I thought you said this stuff worked. And so finally, Cliff and I had this little sit down one afternoon, and he said, you know, what we have to do is get this thing in perspective of what's going on. You cannot take responsibility for the successes, but you don't have to shoulder the responsibilities for the failure either. Ask yourself the question. Here it is again, the big question thing. Ask yourself the question. Did you carry the message of recovery to that man? Yes, sir. Did you work him through the work? Yes, sir. Okay. That's it. That's all you can do. You can't do anything more. That and one other thing. This illusion that we have to be friends with everybody we sponsor. Don't do this. Don't do this. Because what happens is that you start judging who you're going to sponsor or not. That's not your business. That's God's business, who you sponsor. God brings these people in your life. Guys, I've sponsored some of the most unlovable people that you've ever seen in your life. I sponsor guys today that I can hardly stand them. But I love them, and I love what's happening in their life. We'll never be buds, and they'll never be on my Christmas card list. But they're children of God just like me, and they're hurting just like me. And we have a chance to get through this stuff. And it's the coolest thing to experience. One more fast thing. Sponsorship is like this big funnel. It's like this big inverted funnel. And people say, well, how do you sponsor a bunch of guys? Well, you don't do it all at one time. If 20 of you guys walked up to me and said, Myers, I want you to sponsor me, I'm going to dust half of you. I'm going to say, no, I can't do that. And it's only the man that says, sure, I will. Now he's living in arrogance. You see, now his ego is driving the whole thing. Don't do that. But what happens is that God brings men and women into your life to sponsor, and you start out here on the little part of the funnel, and you're heading this direction with it into the big end of the thing. And that, you know, when you get a new guy, you're holding them real close, and you're doing the work, and things are pretty intense down in this narrow little part. And then guess what? The miracle of recovery happens, and now it's God doing for them what they couldn't do for themselves, and now they're less and less grindy. They take less and less time. Now you're getting into the big part of the funnel out here, and now you're ready to take some more into the little piece of the funnel. And then you work it like that, you see? So it's possible to have 50 or 60 guys out here you're sponsoring, because you're talking to them, what, once a week maybe? You see? They're healthy. They're out there on their own doing their own stuff, you see? They got their own buckaroos that they're carrying through the work, you see? And that's the way that stuff works. And that's why it's so cool to see. And so it's also your little barometer is set so that, let's say you're out here in the big part of the funnel and you still got a cat that's calling you every morning with relationship problems. Let's drag his ass back to the beginning and find out what we left out. Where did we go wrong? What is it that this guy's not talking about? You see, how squeaky clean is he in the rest of his life? Let's find out what the problem is. Anybody you still happen to deal with a bunch out here, is you got a problem. You need to go find out what the problem is and bring him back and fix it. And it's real easy to do that. You see? Does anybody have any questions about this stuff? Oh, I was talking to a guy just a minute ago, and I don't know whether he's in here or whether he was in a meeting down the street. I was trying to escape, and he caught me out there on it. No, he said we were talking about singleness of purpose, about drunks sponsoring addicts and addicts sponsoring drunks. Let me frog off into this real quick again, because it's a key to your stuff. Because of the traditions, the way they're set up in our singleness of purpose, I understand that a lot of people who are addicts sober up in AA. God bless you, and I'm glad you're here. Where the rub comes in, where we have a problem, is in the next generation of the drunken addict. You come in and you got sober in AA and you're a heads up addict. You got sober. Now, or you got clean, and now you got a drunk in a medium of Alcoholics Anonymous that wants you to sponsor him. Now you got a heads up addict sponsoring a drunk who does not understand addiction like the addict. You see? I've never smoked any crack in my whole life, guys, and I used to sponsor crack addicts all the time. And you know what? I noticed one day that all my crack addicts are not staying clean. You see, we're not making the connection spiritually and emotionally. The language of the heart is not being, I don't know what it's like to suck on the hot end of a crack pipe. I don't know. You see? And so that's why it's so terribly important that when we get involved with guys like that, can we be a benefit to him? Sure. Can we love him? Sure. Can we help him get some coffee and help him get plugged in? Sure. That's our responsibility. But then it's our responsibility to flip him over to a crack addict that understands what's going on. Don't let your arrogance and your ego get in the way of that stuff, guys. Flip him. Get him plugged in someplace where he can be. And it's the funny thing to watch a crack addict that's now in touch with another crack addict and watch the miracle happen. And they're both smiling at each other, and they say three words to each other and they smile. They know, you see, the connection was made. I've been working with a guy for 2 weeks and we can't get anywhere. The arrogant son of a bitch. You see, I'm grousing around. We never made the connection. And it's hugely important. Anybody got any questions about this stuff? Sponsorship stuff? We all cool on that? You guys are either the shyest people I've ever met or you're the smartest people already. I know. I'm thinking it's more the smarter part.
How do you feel about the long-distance sponsorship?
I think it's a nightmare. I think it's a train wreck waiting to happen. And the reason being is that we as addicts and alcoholics are hugely deceptive people. And we can say, I mean, you ever meet a drunk or an addict that couldn't talk you into anything? We are hugely into the motivation, into the stuff. We'll say whatever we think you want to hear. But our eyes do not lie. When a guy I sponsor that I know walks in and says something to me, and I say, hey, what's up? And he goes, nothing, everything's fine. And I'm looking at his eyes like this, and I know he's full of crap. And I just say, bud, I know you think you're going to go to a meeting tonight and study the big book, but you're not. You and I are going into the back room and we're going to talk. You see? And I can just sweep him out of there and we can go get back on track and see what's really going on in this kid's life. You see? But that's why I think that it's important to have friends in the fellowship. It's important to have buddies that you can deal with. My email is, I love email stuff, and I'll email everybody in this room about stuff. And if you need information, I'm your information guy. I'll always be there for you. But I would never be so arrogant to think that I could effectively sponsor somebody long distance like that. That's probably a personal opinion. I don't think it's in the big book anywhere. Anybody else, y'all cool? Yes, ma'am.
I don't know how you think it's okay to sponsor someone even if you haven't.
You know, that is an absolute excellent question. If I had a gold star, I'd give you one right now.
Could you repeat my question, please?
The question was, is it possible to sponsor somebody if you have not worked the steps? I think that's what you asked.
Yes.
My ears are still a little... No is a good answer. No is a good answer. But let me say, I want to say that as a qualified no. Because what we do is that It's arrogant on our part to think that God will. Sometimes God puts people in our life that we need to work with quickly in recovery. And it doesn't mean I got guys that I work with that have been sober for 2 weeks. We're halfway through the work. We're getting ready to do their stuff. They're already starting to experience this spiritual awakening in their life. They're already starting to do. Now we go to a treatment place because my guys, after a week, they're with me at a treatment place. Three times a week, we're out there doing this stuff. We'll talk about that some in the morning and 12-step stuff. But can they sponsor guys in those treatment places? No. But they can show them what happened in their experience already in 2 weeks. It's the most powerful thing that we can possibly do. It's been 2 weeks since I had a drink or took a drug. And I'm here in this treatment center to tell you that there is hope, that this stuff works, that is not crap. It's not just empty rhetoric. You see? This, and that's where it's so hugely effective that we do that. That's why, and that's where our recovery is boosted and we get so much good from that. And so my fear is that you will use it as an excuse to never get involved in sponsorship. And I've seen thousands and thousands of men over the years do that, just that. Well, you know, we're a year into the deal and this cat's still not worked his work. Well, I can't sponsor anybody because I haven't worked my work. Well, why? Why? Go work the work. You see, come with us and do this stuff. But don't shirk your responsibility. That's the service part of this deal. Somebody walks into your group and they're lost and they're kind of looking around. You know the feeling. You were there once. And they don't know where the crapper is and they don't know where the coffee is. And they don't know where anything is. Show them. Help them. Don't just point. Go get them. Put your arm around them. Tell them that they're welcome here. You know, that's what. But yeah, that'll. Yes, ma'am. I love that question. We talked about this stuff last night. And Chris will probably have some comments on this stuff like that. Let me tell you from my experience. I tried sponsoring women and I find it a huge distraction. And I also. I do. But the grindy part of this stuff, it's not that I don't believe that I could effectively carry a message to a woman. I think that I could. But the grindy part about it is that I have a wife at home that I truly adore. And to put her in a position of having to be there while I work so intimately with a woman, you know, because if we're working together, we're going to have to talk about stuff. And I'm going to have to talk about that guy you touched and that, you know, this, we're going to have to talk about this thing. And when you call me in the middle of the night because some hairy leg guy broke your heart again, and I'm talking to you for an hour on the phone, and my wife is laying there listening to this whole thing. You understand what I'm saying? It's not fair to her to do that and to get into that kind of a situation, you see? But that would be my biggest concern about that kind of stuff. Cliff Bishop, this old dude that I'm talking to, he sponsors lots of women and is effective at doing that kind of stuff. But I couldn't, and I think you have to be. Do what?
He's 80 years old.
He's 80 years old, yes. Enough said on that. Chris, did you? And we need to make it clear that Cliff's not working with Iceland women.
That's cute.
Unbelievable. Y'all do yourself a disservice. You should travel more and you can see how what Meyer said earlier, y'all really are an attractive race over here. This is absolutely phenomenal. I get little blinders on, you know, like in, see, no. Real quick, some of the questions that were one of my big problems with sponsoring somebody of the opposite sex is not, I mean, everybody wants to go with it. Well, it could get out of hand and it could cause problems and I'm down with it. Here's my biggest concern with it. If I sponsor a woman in this room right here and I sponsor a woman, what I'm doing is I'm taking away one woman that somebody else, another woman could sponsor. And we have areas of the country where all the hairy leg guys are, because there's a couple of gurus in a group, they're doing all the sponsoring. And the women that desperately need to learn how to sponsor in order for them to stay sober are not getting the chance. You see, you don't learn something by reading a book. You learn something by doing it. I don't care if it's working a computer or smoking a cigar. Peter
got me addicted to tobacco again last summer. And I want to thank him publicly from the podium for doing that. But we puff on cigars. But the first time he handed me a cigar, you know, I says, "Well, what are you supposed to do? I can't get any air out of this thumb bitch." He says, "You got to bite the tip off. You got to bite." You know, he showed me how, and I smoked my first cigar again. And I mean, it's like we were off to the races, and it's been good ever since. I love traveling with Peter. He always brings the expensive cigars. So we smoke Swisher Sweets in the States. You know, you learn by experience, folks. And if you want to know how to sponsor somebody, you sponsor somebody. I mean, that's how you do it. And I reiterate what Meyer said and get off this podium. When I'm sitting in a room and somebody comes up and asks me to sponsor, the first thing I need to do is get my arrogance out of the way and my ego out of the way and understand that God had played a part in this. And if you're new, you're 2 weeks in this fellowship, and some little lady comes up and taps you on the shoulder, or you're a guy and you're 2 weeks, and some guy taps you and says, "I mean, I'm really identified with what you said at that little meeting last night, you know, and I really need somebody to take me through the work." The next thing coming out of your mouth better be yes. Because I want to tell you something. If you want to know something that will push you through these steps fast, let some newcomer be on your ass trying to get through the work. You'll follow us? It will force you to finish that fifth step. It will force you to finish making your amends so that you can continue to sponsor that person. I think it's the height of arrogance to dust somebody that had the courage to come up to you and ask you to sponsor. There must have been a reason. He must have seen something in you that he wanted. You've got the same power that anybody else has. So what you need to do is just say next. You say yes, absolutely. And then you go work your ass off and try to stay ahead of the guy. That's what you do. And the next one you'll be ready for. I mean, that's what it is. See, this idea that some of us are going to be sponsors and some of us are not is bullshit. Because the book says point blank, if you're not working with others, you're not going to stay sober. Period. Period. And somebody in the first couple of weeks comes up and gives you the opportunity to work with them. Ugh, buddy, they just did you the best favor in the world. Say yes. Absolutely. Any other questions? What you got?
Yeah, I was wondering about sponsoring. When's the right time? After the ninth step? No regardless of the sobriety date.
No regardless of the sobriety date, guys. The question was, when's the right time to sponsor? In the States, we have this terrible problem. I don't know if they do it here, but in the States, we have this terrible problem. Most groups, you know, it's like you can't chair a meeting until you're 6 months sober. You can't sponsor somebody until you've been sober a year. And it's like it's crap. I mean, it's just I don't know. That's not in the book. Bill Wilson was. You know, 6 months sober when he went and found Dr. Bob, you know, and I mean, it's like if we'd waited that long to get sober, this room would be empty because we'd all be drunk. I mean, we'd all be out there in the middle. We don't have time to wait for you to get ready, quote unquote, to go sponsor. You'll never be ready, guys. It's like having sex. You know, it's like there come a time that you got to, all the bullshit's got to stop. And, you know, it's crunch time now, you know, buddy. It's like, you know, and it's like, I don't care how many books you read. I don't care how many dirty pictures you've looked at. Whatever, it's like, you know, you're never quite ready for it. You know, but there comes a time you just got to say, "Okay, buddy, here we go." You know, and it's like, "I hope you're ready." And it's like, and you just do it. You know, and sometimes we could laugh about it, but it's awkward the first time. Sometimes you make a fool of yourself, and sometimes you don't do it right. But you pretty soon you get the hang of it. You see? I mean, you're great. What you got?
Okay, I want to ask you about the AA experience here in Iceland, who are, you know, taking this away from the book. So they let people accept, you know, like the first step for 1 month and the second step for 1 month, and then the whole thing takes 6 months to get to that. Mm-hmm. You know, is that what you think of that?
I think it's not a good idea. I'm trying to get better here. I think it sucks. No, here. Let me ask you a question. If I go make a cake, we'll go down to your kitchen this afternoon. I'll make a cake. But I'm going to put the flour in today. And next month, I'm going to put the eggs in. And three months later, I'll put the milk in. You follow me? Now, I'm going to eventually have a cake, guys. I can't exactly tell you what it's going to look like. But I, you know, The steps were done the same way. This was to have the spiritual experience, folks. That's why some people, they talk about, I'm going to have the spiritual experience of the educational variety. I'm going to tell you something, folks, and we're going to talk about that in just a few minutes. If you work the steps the way they're supposed to, I'm going to tell you something rapidly in a short period of time, 2 weeks, 3 weeks, finish these steps. You will have a life-changing experience, and there won't be any question of whether you've had that experience. It'll blow you out of the water. My experience that sponsors that tell people to take their time to work the steps, like we're going to work one step a year, they're dusting you. The truth is, they just don't want to screw with you. They don't have time to mess with you. You might want to consider getting somebody else. That's the easier way to work with somebody is to get them through quick. This dragging it out. Where were we at? You know, it's like you forget. How can you participate that way? Rapidly. I don't think you can work the steps. Why is it? Let me ask you a question, guys. There's a line in the book that says it and how it works. It talks about we beg of you to be fearless and thorough from the very start. Why does that always have to translate, take your time to work the steps? It just says fearless and thorough from the very start. Let's give it 2 good weeks of your life. Let's get through these steps and let's see what the miracle takes place. This idea to drag it out for what? So the obsession can stay with you so you can eventually go drink and then just say AA doesn't work? I don't agree. But
they call it Boxway.
Absolutely. Absolutely. It's the early cats in Alcoholics Anonymous. Dr. Bob's way was working within a couple of weeks. Guys, the steps were never intended to be drawn out over a long period of time. Never. It was initially that's why we had such great success rate. You're dying, folks. The mental obsession is with you. The spiritual malady is driving you crazy. You're irritable, restless, discontent. The depression's on you. The fear's choking you to death. You hate yourself. You've got low self. I mean, you want to come apart. You with us? But I'm going to tell you, we're going to work these steps. And in about 6 months, you're going to get some relief. No, what we need to do is we said it earlier. We need to get you to God and we need to get you to God quick. That's what we need to do. Yes. Yep. Another question? We still have a few minutes. You always tell when it's time to smoke. What's it got?
We have a system here that the best sponsors, they have like a sponsor book. Mm-hmm. So like a guideline and how to go and first you write your how you can control your life and you have these big things for you.
Mm-hmm.
No.
Next question. You know, this is great. This is great. But this is one more time. And it may work for some people. I'm not saying it wouldn't work for some people. You know, we do it in treatment. You know, we'll drag this out forever. You know, we make a consequence list and we do all this stuff. And you may benefit from all of this. My sponsor is Mark Houston, and over the period of time, initially we worked the steps rapidly. And I got sober early on before I even met Mark. And then later on in sobriety, I'm 15 years sober. I do some things in the steps that take a long time. You know, extended third columns and is very intricate and it takes a lot of time. I've grown from that and I've benefited from that, but I'd have been dead if somebody had come to me initially and said, this is what you got to do. Jump through this hoop, jump over this hoop, you got to do all of this stuff. You know, it's not that complicated. It's not that complicated. I'm not going to knock that. It may work great. If it works for you, give it a shot. But what we're trying to do is learn from our forefathers, the people that were here before us. They did not take much time to work the steps, and they worked it directly out of the information. Does that make sense? Does that answer your question? It's good stuff. But keep working the steps too. You what I'm saying? It's all about us. We're the most selfish, self-centered people on earth. I love writing about myself. You know, how do I feel today? You know, I feel like shit. Okay, that's good. I mean, it's a great exercise. You know, it's not going to help anybody else. You know, what I need to do is stop worrying about how I feel and start thinking about how you feel, because that's my job. That's what keeps me sober. Helping other drunks.
Appreciate the question,
Jerry.
Yes, my question is, I've sponsored a couple of women, and my experience is that they have a package when they come in, and they need relief and answers immediately. They're in situations and I caught it early on that I'm not a counselor, and I don't want to take responsibility on counseling you on some issues. How do you handle that at the beginning of such sponsorship? You're connecting them with God, But do you say, hold on, just put this on the side just while we do this? Or?
Just, it's a great question. Did y'all hear the question?
Yeah.
You know, because we all come to this. A lot of us, this comes as a newsflash to some of you. We come to this fellowship with a lot of baggage. You know, it's stuff that's, we got a disease that's killing us, and that's what we're here to do, is to treat that disease. But we also have some childhood of origin issues. We also have some marital problems. We have some. The question specifically was, what do you do when somebody comes and asks you to sponsor them, but they've got all this other baggage? How do you separate the baggage from the program? And I think the answer is quite simple. Don't talk about something that you have no experience on. And it's like, we're not therapists. Against what we talked about, we get this straight going in the door. I say this going in. Sometimes people want to gang up. Chris, you always seem to be so tough on therapists. I'm a huge sponsor of therapy. I think if you're new in Alcoholics Anonymous and you're not seeing a therapist, you're really screwing up. You're really making a mistake, because there's a lot of stuff out there that we did and a lot of stuff that we need to mentally work through. It's got nothing to do with this disease. You see, everybody wants to lump it all together. It's all alcoholism. No, this is alcoholism. Physical allergy, mental obsession, spiritual malady. The rest of this stuff is other. We call it in the States. We talk about outside issues. And what I do is, I've got a list of therapists, sex therapists, money therapists, you know, marital therapy. So, and I got a list of these people. And when I get a gat that's going through this stuff, I give them the number of this therapist and says, you need to call this professional and go talk to this cat about it. Just like I do when the guy comes in. I work with a lot of addicts and stuff. The guys come and they got bad teeth, you know, from out there on the street, and they're not taking care of themselves, and their teeth are falling out. What am I going to do? I'm going to go in there and say, look, buddy, I think you've got a freaking cavity back here. I think you need to. No, but we laugh about it, but y'all do the same thing with this. I understand it, and you were molested. Well, listen, here's what I think you should do. Here's what I think you should do. Shut up. Unless you've been through it, you don't have a clue what they've been through. You need to get them to somebody that has been through it so that they can help. Listen, I'm a product of a lot of different people in this fellowship, a lot of people, doctors and therapy. And I got here, I was beat up, and I needed doctors and I needed therapy and I needed people to help me in other areas. Thank God one man didn't try to fix me. Makes sense? It makes it so much simpler for us. Let's do what we do best. Who can talk? Who knows an alcoholic like another alcoholic? Myers was just talking about, who knows another heroin addict like another heroin addict? Nobody. We do one thing. Guys, we have lived through this so that we could accomplish one thing, so we could turn around and share that experience with somebody else. What? We don't need to make up stuff to help people with. Make sense? Dust them. Help them get someplace else with that business. And then you focus on what we need to focus on, which is the spiritual experience. Because you know how to show them how to have a spiritual experience. That you know how to do. Must make sure that gets done. Who else?
Anybody? I want to ask you something else. Like, when you tell a counselor in AA, what can take you through the next step? When he tells you to, you know, read, like, the love addiction book and,
The question is a good one. In early, I assume we're talking about early on in sponsorship. When you come in and you got a sponsor that wants you to read a bunch of other literature that's not quote unquote AA approved. Makes sense? There's a lot of great books out there that we can all benefit from. And I think we all need to do that. I don't have my guys read anything but the big book. I'll say this from the podium. I don't have my guys read the 12 and 12. I don't have my guys read meditation books. I don't have my guys do anything but stick their beak in the first pages of the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous. I've got them right here, right now. While their attention is right here, I need to focus in on that. This is killing them. The rest of the stuff is a damn inconvenience in life, and we need to look at that. You follow us? But this right here is what's killing me. So can you read that other stuff? Yeah. Right after you finish the steps. I think it's a great idea. Any other question?
Wondering what you thought about sponsoring gay people, about straight people sponsoring gay people, or gay people sponsoring straight people.
Could care less. Here again, because it's an outside issue, and I think if the person that's there is making an issue out of it, we're off the page. It's no more bigger of an issue than somebody that's been molested, or somebody that's been to Vietnam, or somebody that's blind in one eye. I mean, what are we? I'm not making light of that. It says, but that is not why I'm a drink. If you're drinking because you're gay, then you're not one of us. You're not an alcoholic, and I don't have anything to share with you. If you're suffering from the disease, I have something to share with you. You want to talk about problems with being gay? Let's find some gay people to talk to. You follow us? It's got nothing. I don't care if you molest little animals. Let's talk about this. Anything to stay warm in this damn place, I tell you that. Yes, sir.
My name is Paul.
Hey, Paul.
My second sponsor came to me and said, I want to be your sponsor. I said, okay. Then he said, start meditating while you do this stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Because you'll approach them differently if you're meditating while you should start doing the LMSF right from the start, not wait until you go through.
Mm-hmm.
Do it right away. Start learning it. I think it made me approach this stuff differently. I think it made me have a spiritual experience.
Mm-hmm.
It totally changed everything.
Great question. You hear it. Should you practice the 11 steps? Should you practice meditation while you work the steps? Or should you wait till the 11th step to start practicing? The book's pretty clear. It talks about it. It talks about it. Let's get started with it. I wouldn't begin to start working with somebody until we begin to start practicing the disciplines of 10, 11, and 12. I mean, that's what that's about. I know we work them in order, but guys, our purpose is to get you connected to God, and it's in the stillness that God's going to talk to you. So let's start practicing now, getting quiet. I think that was excellent advice from that sponsor. I think that was excellent advice. Would you agree? Any other? I'm sure.
Absolutely.
Meditation is one single thing that you can do to affect your program. If you're in a doldrum in your program and everything has gotten flat, let's look at your meditating life. Let's look at your meditating life because it'll be completely different if you'll start the disciplines of meditation every morning, guys. Every morning or every night, whenever you do it. But once a day, at least, get quiet so that you can hear God's voice. Because that's when you hear it. When you're quiet, not when you're talking. Any other question, guys? The smokers are lining up. You got it? That's good stuff. We'll be back in an hour. We'll be back.